Hi, I'm Tanya Thompson, writer and creator of Nightlight, the Black Horror Podcast. Last week, we took a trip to the past, and this week, we're going to the future. Author Anya Wilson gives us a ghost story with a twist. But before we hop into our time machine, we have a quick message from this episode's sponsor. Radio Public is a free app for iOS and Android, and they care about podcast listeners and creators. When you listen to this podcast via the Radio Public app, you'll help us fund more stories from Black writers. Radio Public is perfect if you're unable to contribute to the podcast financially. It's free for you, and it makes us money. So if you aren't ready to become a member of the Nightlight Legion, head on over to bit.ly/radio-nightlight and support us that way. And without further ado, here's Unwanteds by Anya Wilson.
The coal box outside Holly's place displayed not one, but two cartoon sneaking forms. But I kept at the buzzer until one of the animated figures rose. Within a couple of seconds, Holly's real face appeared on the screen, and a sigh left her lips. Despite the look in her eyes, she opened the door. Evening, or morning, whichever you like. Before you go telling me to get out of here, hear me out. I licked my cracked lips, giving her a small chance to send me off, because once I got started, I wouldn't stop till everything was out. She said absolutely nothing and stood stiller than a corpse. I cleared my throat. Now, I said, beginning at the beginning. I knew better than to listen to Jazzy. That fucking boy was messed. Let's just say he had a couple extra letters inserted into his DNA. So when he started spouting some shit about ghosts and revenge and poltergeists, I just figured he'd got rigged up again. That happens more than the newsies are letting on, you know. Now, I hope you're not believing everything you read about rigging. It ain't all fiends chasing a high they can't catch. Most of it's them on that damn hill chasing us so they can test out some new fucked up drug that inspires creativity while also curing your venereal diseases or so some shit like that. Things between us and the state is always going to be fucked. Ain't no changing that. Ain't no getting out once you're in. Some fucked up shit on a whole new level. But that's not why I had your fancy box wake you up. I did it because something is going on. And I remember you used to be into this kind of stuff, and that got me thinking that maybe you'd be interested in helping an old man out. I want you to know exactly what happened so that you know I ain't here to fuck you about. I'm not sure how much you pay attention to the broadcasts, but a few months back we, my friends, the people I settled down with, and me, got ourselves treated to a fancy upgrade. Story goes, a company invested a load of credit into this bit of land just outside the city limits. The plan was to make it into one of those company communes where you work where you live and live where you shit. Very self-contained model, I'm told. Anyways, all these fucking houses got built, and nice ones too. Big old southern gothic beauties, white columns, pointed arches, and the whole shebang. Right there in the middle of all that nothingness too. And we got them shits for free because the company went under or into hiding or some shit. My bet is they all got themselves killed. That should have been our first indication that something was just not right. But those houses, damn, just looking at them sets you in a dream. There weren't no way we were going to argue and say no once they bust us in, and those state fuckers probably knew that. Hell, before they brought us there and after they hoodwinked us outside the canteen where those nice fellas gave us sandwiches, they took us to this public bath. Said they'd rented it out for privacy. Fuck that noise. It was for their privacy, so they could hose us down and burn our stuff. Then they had the nerve to say that it was for health concerns. Bullshit. We lived just fine like that for years. Turns out they did it so we could look all prim and clean and proper for the cameras and newsies. None of them even asked us anything, but then they put all these phony-ass comments below our pictures they never asked to take. So, if you do follow the bullshit broadcast, and you saw a picture of this fella looking sullen saying something like, "Never before have I felt so welcomed," shit weren't real. But I'll tell you something really real. The first night, something dark took hold of Jazzy. I could hear him through the wall having one of his fits. Not that the walls were thin or anything, but because I was straining to hear him. After all that time living together the way we did, it was hard to just lie behind some wooden plaster and call it close enough. So, I heard him begging all night. At the time, I just thought he was having another episode. Like I said, that shit just happens a lot. That's why I didn't do nothing but listen. Not because I was afraid, hell, I didn't know then there was something to be afraid of. When I went to relieve myself in the morning, I spotted Shelley and Victor and a couple newcomers gathering up in one of the yards. Once I joined them, all they wanted to talk about was food, and I get that, but ever since last October my stomach ain't been right, so hearing about food only makes me sick. But Jazzy had followed me out without my noticing, and he wasn't having any pie and bacon malarkey neither. He had a story to tell. He said that during the night his room trapped him inside. Windows, doors, walls, and all were locked to him. He couldn't get out no matter how hard he tried. Said it wasn't until the morning that his lockdown ended and he was freed from his torment. But Shelley was a cruel one though, and just laughed at him saying, "It's not like you never spent a night in a jail cell." Just like that, and if you would have just seen him. Not so much how he looked, because in the night, I will say, they had scoured away all the harsh work the state had put into cleaning us. But if you could have watched him speak and seen the tremble in his hands and the look of light gone from his eyes, you would have thought for sure some fucked up shit happened. Now, I didn't blame Jazzy or intervene when he grabbed Shelley and shook her like she was a sleeping baby doll. One of the newcomers, never got her name, tried to step in and show she had gall, but Victor stopped that wee bitty just as Jazzy let Shelley go. And Shelley was laughing and giggling and making a joke out of it like it was no damn thing. Jazzy wouldn't let up though, and what he said happened next shut Shelley right up. He started talking about how his walls stopped being walls and became tracks crossing, transporting him to the heart of the financial district just as the markets closed. People came from every direction to overcome and pass him like he was some misplaced ghost. When he tried to shut his eyes to all of it and escape into the messed up world that was his own head, they started yelling at him, saying shit like he was filth and scum and death and disease and war and crisis and greed and nothing. Nothing. Nothing fucking good. It obviously sounded like a bunch of nonsense to me. I had my ear pressed against that wall harder than Shelley against anyone with more than 100 to their name, and I ain't heard jack shit. That's the truth. All I heard was him running up the walls of his own head. Finally, when he thought it was all over because the yelling had stopped, the people all caught fire, he said, like God was striking a match to their souls. After that shit left his mouth, I told the others the truth. Not with him standing there, of course. I waited for him to march off muttering about some other shit. As soon as he was far enough away, I told him what I heard. My story wasn't as thrilling as Jazzy's, but still, it was the truth, so that had to count for something. It didn't though. Victor hopped on the ghost train even before Jazzy had finished telling us what had happened. As soon, and I mean the second Victor's lips parted, I just knew we were in for a hell of a time. Not before long, everyone done come out into the street like nothing changed at all, like we didn't have houses to go into. But once everyone was there, we started hearing more stories of crazy shit happening in the other houses, like the airflow going haywire and freezing people out into the night or cooking them raw to the point of pink flesh and heat exhaustion. No one had it as bad as Jazzy though, and if they did, they sure as hell didn't say it. Most of the shit was pretty basic haunting stuff from what I read at the downtown public research facility. Things like finding shit not where you left it, except when our stuff was found it was destroyed and taken out like waste. There is obviously a presence within those homes that doesn't want us folks living there. Sometimes I think maybe it's the residue of resent left over by the corporation that wasted billions of trillions of capital on making that place nothing more than a vacant lot with nice ass houses in it. I just don't know what to do anymore. After Jazzy killed himself trying to rid the neighbourhood of that wickedness, and Shelley followed the newcomers down a spiral of Satanism and horrid animation that ended in so much death and sadness, most of everyone has up and gone. The ones who are still around are sticking to what we got. We've been camping out in the main heart of the place. Got ourselves a nice cosy little setup in the middle of a cul-de-sac. A couple of structures made from some scrap wood we found in a little forest nearby. It's no mansion, but at least we ain't hounded for our blood and driven insane. You got to know I need you though, and I need you something bad because I don't got a lot, but what I do got is in danger. If I go it alone, I'll fuck shit up for sure, probably even die, and well, there's no one else I know who's as smart or resourceful or fearless as you. So what do you say? Will you help your old man out? She had changed in the years since I last saw her, over 20 years ago, maybe more. There's no point in keeping track in things like that. All that matters is I left, not when. Dad? The word sounded strange in her mouth. She noticed it too. Cal, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. Do you want me to come tell you that there aren't ghosts in your house? I fucking know there's ghosts. I don't need you or anyone to tell me that. We are way beyond identifying. We're at the stage of battle, and if we don't act soon, we'll lose everything. It was late and cold, and rain was near. Holly pulled her robe tighter around her body and reached into the unknown behind the door. She retrieved a long jacket, black like the twilight choking in around us. After shutting the door, she slid down against it. In her descent, she pulled a pack of cigarettes out of an inside pocket and loaded one into her mouth. As she breathed in, it sparked and flamed, shooting nicotine deep into her lungs. She laughed out smoke. "Alright, what's going on? You need more capital to waste or something? Want to take a car? Tell me exactly what you fucking want. It's late, much too late for whatever this is." Smoke poured out of her nostrils and clouded her face. "It's all yours anyway. I never touch your movie caps." "Why ain't you listening? I keep trying to tell you that shit is going down. I'm not messing you about, I swear." Reaching her prescribed limit, the cigarette cut itself short. Holly wasted the rest of it, stubbing it out on the concrete of her porch. "Oh, no. I hear you. Crazy shit at your new mansion." Her hands danced in the steam of her breath as she continued parading concern. "Gotta get down there to save your shit pile and your addict friends before fucking ghosts get them. What do I have to do to get you to believe me?" I yelled, getting close. "Hey," a voice barked. Someone opened Holly's door, causing her to fall back into the entryway of her townhouse. They were broad and bold and took one step over Holly's body to grab me by my hood. Whatever strength possessed that mortal, God gave it to me. With one hand, they tossed me with such force down the flight of stairs and into the coming rain that every part of me rattled and quaked like a puddle. "Fuck," Holly gasped, rising from the ground and pushing past my assaulter. They grabbed her by the arm. "No, I'll go get my service revolver. You hop on the channel and tell them we got ourselves a trash pickup." Pushing them away, Holly raced down the stairs and cupped me like a child in the way that I should have cupped her when she was a child, but couldn't. Every touch of her hand on my skin felt like fiery needles digging into my flesh. I backed away from her. "Please," I said in a whisper like rain, "I need your help." All right, she said. "Take me to this haunted suburb." So I did. And to my dismay, her companion joined us as well. They insisted on coming, and Holly seemed to think we might need them. I only saw hate and misfortune in their eyes and kept my distance the best I could in their SUV. Holly gave them a quick rundown of my story. This time she did so without the hand movements and over-exaggerated facial tics. We took the ramp out of the city and into the surrounding wasteland. Acres of crops and animal manufacturing plants stretched out to the north, while the reflectors that bounced the sun's overcharged rays to the city's solar windows took over most of the southern region. But we weren't heading there. We were heading into the bought-out corporate lands of the east. Lands traded and sold for private use, but more often than not being left to sit untouched. Hansen, Holly's companion, seemed to know their way about the outer limits of public access. Even said they knew about the housing development. "Yeah, Safeco bought up this whole area and the neighbouring ones as well. They wanted to move their headquarters closer to the city, their main client," Henson said, glaring at the darkness their car's high beams couldn't penetrate. They chuckled softly. "I guess the only problem was, their employees had an issue with the way we live here. See, they come from a country where their biggest municipality is less than 20,000 citizens. Us living here with over 100 million people under and above ground makes their skin crawl. Only solution they had was to live separate from it all. They'd keep their small community life and still get a fat paycheck from all the pies they finger. It was supposed to be paradise." "What happened?" Holly asked from the passenger seat. "Who knows? This shit happens all the time. Things are built and abandoned. Maybe they found a better plot of land somewhere else. Maybe they figured it would be more cost effective in the long run to remain where they were. Maybe in the end it wasn't enough." "You all will see once we get there why they abandoned the place," I piped in from the rear seating. "Yeah," Hansen said, glancing up at me from the mirror above their head. "We will see." As Hansen drove out of the dark valley, our fires from the spot we made out in the open dotted the night sky in the distance. "Well, I'll be damned," Hansen muttered. "Would you look at that," Holly gasped. We were our own fucking little city. Even from the distance, the flames raged so strong they created a red dome of light above our haunted homes. "Wait till we get there." When Hansen rounded the cul-de-sac of fire we called our home, the circle was empty. They turned off the engine and hopped out. I guess the houses swallowed your friends all up. Hush, I warned. I called for them in our secret way and listened for their response. Nothing sounded from the night but the fire licking at air. I repeated my call and shut my eyes, hoping that I'd be able to hear a faint, distant response, and yet, there was still only nothing. We should check in one of these houses, Holly suggested, coming to stand near me. Maybe they hid from the SUV. It looks pretty official. If we're going in, we need to arm up, I said. You got your holy water, crosses and Bible? They both stared at me blankly. If we are going to fight evil, we must use the instruments of good to expel it, I explained what shouldn't need explaining. How about we check things out first, and then we can decide on if all that is in order, Hansen said, heading toward the house closest to us. I ain't going into one of those things unarmed. What do you think I am, crazy or something? Hansen said, heading towards the house closest to us. I ain't going into one of those things unarmed. What do you think I'm crazy or something? Holly slapped Hansen on the arm before they could say what I knew they wanted to say. You can go in, but I'm going to stay right out here with my daughter. A look hung between the two for a few moments before Hansen groaned and grabbed a flashlight out of the trunk of their car and went into the house without even a knock. I stood outside with Holly, listening for a scream from Hansen or a response from the others, but not even the insects chirped a symphony. Yeah, I really believe these houses are haunted, Holly asked. Of course, if I didn't, I wouldn't have got you involved. But this was just a hobby I had in, like, high school. It was just an adolescent search for something greater than myself, something greater than the famous dad who didn't want me. If I could prove that there were ghosts, hidden workings in the world around us, I could somehow find a replacement, or, I don't know, find something better. She shrugged under her big coat. What I needed back then, I didn't think was real, so I sought it in the unnatural world. I've grown up a lot since high school, learned that there's a whole world out there with real things and real people who don't need to be replaced because they are just there. Things were stacked against us from the get, I said, and went to say more but closed my mouth instead. Whatever I was going to say wouldn't be good enough and wouldn't be anything different than what I've said before. She sighed and loaded up another cigarette. What the hell is taking Per so long? Per? That explains the... I whistled, insinuating certain parts of my body and twirling a non-existent moustache. Holly rolled her eyes and stormed off in the direction of the house, throwing a cigarette down to the ground. I stopped her by jumping in her path. She went to push me out of the way, and I instinctively dodged her touch. Why don't you just take your shots? Her voice grew deep with annoyance. They'll take the pain away. Yeah, and every other feeling. I'd rather feel pain than nothing. And I'm sorry that it's done so much damage to what could have been us, but there's nothing we can do about that. We gotta move on and fight the things that are in front of us. She sighed. I don't need your apologies. I've gotten over a lot of this and have moved on with my life. Moved on enough to let my guard down and let someone in for once. Hansen's got problems and isn't perfect, but Per is there whenever I need Per. That's what matters to me. That's good, I guess. Yeah, that's real good. Holly, Hansen called from the doorway of the house. Get my computer from the console and bring it in. I think I've got his ghost. We gathered what Hansen needed. It took a bit of convincing to get me to even get close to the house. In the end, I stood and watched from the doorway. They pulled open a panel in the security system and plugged in the computer we had brought from the truck. Holly worked at the wires on the inside that spilled out into her hand once they popped open the board, and Hansen pounded lightning fast on the keys of Per's external terminal base. Holler when you're in. I only have a small window to type the codes before the protocols kick in and boot us out, Hansen said. Holly bit her tongue. Now, go! We're in, Hansen said, clapping Per's hands together. The two exchanged pleased looks. Now let me see what they got these bad babies running on. If it's Safeco, no doubt their own software, Holly said, squatting beside Per and hanging her arm off Per's shoulder. Go in there, might be a back door, she gestured at something on the screen. Doubtful, what the hell? Hansen removed Per's hands from the screen and stared down in astonishment. That's more than a back door.
Welcome,
spoke a voice from the house's interior. It sounded quietly natural and new.
I am your state-of-the-art home. I will care for and protect you. I will be your oasis from the worries of the...
Hello, I yelled into the dark opening of the home. Who am I speaking to?
My name is Hope. How may I assist you?
Hope? What the hell kind of name is that for a poltergeist? I want you out and gone, you hear me? It's not a ghost, it's the house itself, the programmed AI assistant. Hope, Hansen said, her name with thick authority. Are you connected to the rest of the homes?
We are all on the same network, like neighbours in a village.
Do you know what happened in the other houses? My dad says there were some incidents, Holly asked the house.
We did what we were programmed to do.
You terrorised us!
We attempted to rid the colony of an infestation. It's our first directive. Keep the inhabitants safe and comfortable. The occupation of outside entities triggered our failsafes to come on in an attempt to return the community to its prescribed conditions.
Can you stop it? Holly asked Hansen. Just tell it to stop, I said, stepping into the house. The door slammed behind me. Now listen here, you big lug, I said. There's no need to protect that town anymore. There's no town like the one you know and never was. The people who were meant to come here never showed up. It's just us now, and all we're after is a nice, safe place to call our own. Silence. Do you hear me? I said they never showed up. They built you and made you and then left you. They just plain old left, so you can forget everything they told you about the world, because it doesn't matter. They're gone and don't care how well you perform your functions.
They never came,
Hope said in that innocent voice.
Why?
Probably because they didn't want to anymore. Humans are like that. One minute we want it all, and the next we want nothing to do with it. Got it, Hansen interjected. I deactivated its controls. The system is shut off. Permanently. Bye-bye, ghost. What? I said, turning to face Purr. You killed her? Hansen looked up at Holly, rising to stand. No, I turned off the system. That wasn't a real person, just a voice tied to some code. No one died. Yeah, no one you cared about, I said. It's over now, Holly said. That's all that matters. I'm sure soon your friends, the ones left over, will return. Things are safe, the houses can be lived in. I turned from them and went to the door. My hand hesitated on the knob before I turned it. There was no resistance, no trapping fear, just a door leading to the smoky night. These houses will always carry the horrors of the past. What are you going to do then? Hansen asked, packing up her equipment. Go back to the streets? I sighed. Is there any bringing Hope back? Oh, absolutely not. That buried programming had developed a virus that would have only sent the houses into more catastrophic states. I wiped everything. There's not even a factory reset available. No, no, these are just houses now, nothing more. Yeah, houses no one wants. Did you want to keep that program running so that it could continue terrorizing you? Hansen scoffed. You should be grateful, Purr said, carrying Purr things past me and back to the SUV. I followed Purr and my daughter out onto the lawn. Purr's right, there was no fixing it. We had to rid every trace of Hope. But on the bright side, we exorcised your ghost, Holly said, with a small smile of confidence. That weren't no ghost. That was a chance to get something right for once. I may not be as sharp as I used to be, but I know an opportunity when I seize one. Hansen looked weary, but Holly stared at me with her big eyes like she was a kid again, and I was a father she could look to for answers. At least, that's what it seemed like to me. Everyone and everything in this city is pitted to keep us down, to remind us of who we are, but with Hope, we had a chance to rewrite all that, to show her that we ain't no different than anybody else. But you ruined that, and just like everyone else before you who had the ability to make things right, you shut her up and snuffed her out. Only thing any of us should be grateful for is the hate that went with her, the hate they put in her. Hansen chuckled softly. You're crazy than your biographies lead people to believe. Come on, Holly, let's go home. I'm tired of this. She looked back at Hansen, standing by the car, and said, okay. Thanks, Holly, for helping the best you could, I said and turned, leaving them behind.
Hi, we are here today with Anya Lauren Wilson, author of Unwanted. Anya, how are you today?
I am good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I really loved your story. Can you tell us about the inspiration for it?
The inspiration for Unwanted kind of came from a story prompt that I found in a book, but mainly it was from this idea that I had of wanting to write a horror story that doesn't have the main horror in it. So a haunted house story that doesn't have a haunted house.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So do you normally write horror?
In my mind, yes, everything I write has a dark twinge to it or a dark hint or tint to it. but not, it doesn't always have to be scary. I could just be talking about dark things, but in my mind, I definitely always see it as horror.
So how long have you been writing?
For me, it's kind of one of those stories that a lot of writers have where I've been writing since I was a kid, but I only seriously kind of picked it up as a career path about 3 years ago. I really started on focusing at making writing a career choice and putting more effort into it consciously, whether that's through editing, completing projects, sending stories. So about 3 years.
Awesome. So where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 5 years as far as your writing career goes?
Hopefully in a good place. I plan on continuing writing and submitting stories. I've been working on a novel that I want to submit to agents. So hopefully by that point, it'll be out and on agents' tables getting read. But sole purpose is just keep writing, getting published, getting my words out there.
Awesome. So what is your writing process like? Do you outline or are you a pantser?
It kind of all depends on how big the project is. For a story like Unwanteds, it's very pantsy. I just sit down, I know beginning, middle, end, I know title, and I just let it all go. And it usually takes me a couple of hours to get done with the story. And then I go back a couple of weeks later for the heavy lifting of editing and rewrites.
And you have another story that's going to be coming up on the podcast, Dead Children, Stop Playing for Ungrateful Audiences. So everyone should keep an eye out for that next month in October. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired that story?
That one is a bit darker, just because of story content and everything that goes on with it and kind of what I wanted to say. That came from just seeing a lot of death among youth, a lot of death in general. But I kind of felt like a lot of the death was getting focused more on the people who were still alive and not so much on the person who had lost their life. And I kind of wanted to write a story that can bring and how dead people would feel if they could come back and kind of see how their memory is not really their memory anymore. It's a construct of what living people made of them. And I thought that they would be sarcastic and not okay with not being remembered or listened to or kind of remembered as the people they were.
So it sounds like a lot of your writing, it seems, falls under, you know, sort of an alternative perspective of, you know, some of the common tropes like the haunted house, but, you know, we're not focused on the haunted house and, you know, we're looking at dead people, but we're not really looking at what the living people are worried about. You know, it's more about what the dead people are worried about. Would you say that a lot of your stories kind of follow that same alternative perspective?
Yeah, definitely for sure. I feel as though that's just because how I think. And those are the things that I focus about and I try to interact with other people and kind of talk about those ideas. I don't usually get satisfactory conclusions. And so I turn to writing for a lot of it where I kind of put out that scenario and how it would play out in the real world.
So what is your favorite books, short story, podcast, film, whatever, your favorite piece of Black horror out right now?
Right now? This one I kind of debated about because I don't know if anyone would see it really as Black horror or horror in general. Philip K. Dick's Amazon's redo of his stories in Electric Dreams. There are a lot of people of color in that show. And a lot of the stories and the tropes they go through, he was one of those sci-fi writers who used, or at least it always seems like whenever I read it, the Black experience to talk about different scientific arguments of AIs coming to life or robots coming to life and the slave culture that would come from that.
Awesome. I have not seen that. So I'm going to have to check that out for sure.
Oh, it's great.
How would you say being a Black person affects what you write?
I think it affects everything that I write only because of the fact that I'm Black. And so all of my experiences are through the Black lens a lot of the time. So even without thinking about it, I'll write a story and someone will critique it who isn't Black. And they'll be like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I've never experienced this before. And it's like, oh, but that's a thing that happens frequently to a lot of people. So I think like, yeah, everything that comes out of me always relates back to my experience as a person and as a Black woman in America.
So you said that, you know, you've been working toward being a professional writer for about 3 years now. And this story is the first fiction story you've sold.
Yeah.
Have you submitted elsewhere?
Yeah, I submit quite a bit, actually. I have a pretty rigorous submitting schedule for getting my stories out there.
So I guess then you probably collect a lot of rejection letters.
Oh, yeah. A lot of rejections. But at this point, it's kind of just like the name of the game where it's like, okay, yeah, you know, they rejected it, but that's fine. Now I have my story back. I can workshop it a little bit more, edit it a little bit more, and then submit it to a new place.
Right. Do you feel like a lot of those rejections are because maybe people just don't understand your stories? You know, obviously publishing is overwhelmingly white. And, you know, while there are some, you know, specific places that are looking for stories written by Black authors or, you know, authors of color, you know, a lot of times, you know, we submit something and it's, they just don't get it. Do you feel like that's the case for a lot of yours, or do you feel like there's something else behind those rejections?
Because it's always, or not always, but like a lot of the time it's the form rejection of, you know, it just says, thanks for submitting, you know, sorry, we're going to pass on this work. So I never get to hear, you know, what's the reason behind it getting rejected. And when I do get a reason, it's usually has more to do with it didn't win the editor over enough. But when I do like workshop stories or have friends read them who don't come from the same experiences that I've come from, and they give the pushback of this would never happen or like, this doesn't make sense. It does make me think, oh, I wonder when I submit this, is that what they're thinking because they've never experienced this? But I always try and hope that when editors or slush readers are going through their stories, they are taking themselves out of the story.
Yes, absolutely. They should be. They should be, yes.
Yeah.
So Unwanted was very dialect heavy. You know, it's definitely a very Black voice. I would not say it's a Black story, you know, to the degree that, you know, a lot of people might identify something as a Black story. Although I think, you know, anything you write as a Black person is going to, you know, like you said, be from a Black lens and therefore a Black story to some degree. Have you submitted The Unwanteds anywhere else? And if so, you know, did you get any comments about the use of dialect?
I haven't submitted it. This is, I wrote this story maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. So it's really new. And I didn't submit it, mainly because I thought it needed, I don't know, I wasn't in a place where I thought I could submit it. And then one night I was going through it again and I was like, you know what, I'm going to try it. Like, I'm really proud of this story. I really like the dialect. I think the dialect is tops.
Oh, yes, it is. I love it. That's what sold me.
And so, you know, I submitted it and the critiques that I got back on it before submitting, the dialect was one of the things that, like, even though reading it, some people said it was hard to follow because they couldn't really hear the voice in their head, that the dialect was what made it stand out the most.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that's what makes it great for audio in particular. So I was thrilled to have it in my inbox because I do think it's, you know, perfect for an audio format. And I do think that, you know, part of what it means, you know, to be a Black horror writer, in particular, I think audio and movies are an excellent medium to, you know, sort of reach quote unquote mainstream audiences with Black work because they don't have to in their heads, you know, create this character to the degree that they would have to in a written piece. How do you feel about, you know, written works, you know, prose? And I think you said you write poetry as well versus, you know, audio formats or movies, you know, what's your preferred format and what do you think are the advantages?
My preferred formats, for consuming, or for putting things out there?
Both.
Ooh, consuming. I have to, it's a toss up between reading, or watching a show or a movie. I tend to do both at the same time usually. But when it comes to like getting work out there, definitely reading and audio format. Those are the ways that I really like to kind of have my stuff out there. I like having it read, especially like on a podcast like this that puts more than just vocal production to it, where there's like music, there's sound effects. It actively brings the story alive. I love that most when it comes to listening to podcasts. But yeah, my main ways of getting things and putting things out there, TV, reading, and then, yeah, podcast.
Awesome. So is there anything else that you have coming out soon that we can read or watch or listen to?
No, I don't have anything. I have a blog that I update on a pretty regular basis where people can look at my poetry or my nonfiction essays on love, romance, and dating.
Awesome. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Is there anything else?
Nope, that's pretty much it. Besides, like, huge thanks for, you know, the story, having it read, and all of that.
Awesome. Well, I'm thrilled to have it on the podcast, and I'm thrilled you submitted it. So thank you for sharing your work with us. Today's episode was narrated by Marbelle. It was produced by Jen Zink of the Skiffy and Fancy podcast. Thanks to Jen and our newest minion, Meredith, and imp, Kevin, for joining the Nightlight Legion and supporting Black writers. Because of you, this podcast won't be wiped out like Hope. AIs and podcasts have feelings too. You too can join the Nightlight Legion on Patreon by going to patreon.com/nightlightpod. We are so close to locking down one episode per month, but we need your help. If a one-time contribution is more your speed, you can help us pay Black writers by going to paypal.me/nightlightpodcast. And remember, if you're not ready to contribute financially, you can listen via Radio Public for free to help this podcast pay more Black writers. As always, reviews on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, or your favorite podcast provider are appreciated and help others who may be ready to contribute to the podcast find us. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another story.